Joseph.
You are listening to Two Magicians, One Mic.
Welcome to Two Magicians, One Mic. We're on the same continent, same room.
I'm Simon Carnell.
My name is Nick Paul. Thanks to everybody who listened. A lot of people reached out and they liked the last episode, even though we thought it was going to be a complete debacle. So yeah, thanks for those people.
For those who missed it, last episode was the first time we recorded from completely different continents via separate janky Wi-Fi on opposite sides of Mexico. And the delay was so bad, we had to spend the entire call/recording saying over a la walkie-talkies at the end of each sentence so that we actually knew when we could jump in or not. And yeah, it was a mess, but apparently it ended up being surprisingly entertaining.
I had to start doing it with my wife too, because when you're on a boat in the middle of the Pacific Ocean with the worst Wi-Fi in the world, like, it doesn't make sense. MSNBC and Fox News come in clear as day,
yeah.
But I can't send a text message.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's, and it what we were talking about the whole episode, it just causes you to, forces you to listen and make a complete sentence, and which my wife and I do not do. We're like, da-da-da-da, trail off into thought, da-da-da-da, and like both of us do this. So it's a good marriage technique too, if you want to help out a relationship.
There you go. When dealing with crappy time delays on long distance calls or bad Wi-Fi calls, try saying over at the end of your sentences, or just do it in normal conversation as a communications exercise.
There you go. You're off to travel the world for 5 weeks.
Yeah,
because you've been in town so long, like 7 days. That's enough time for you to leave now.
Yeah, I'm annoyed. I mean, I'm not. It's again, it's a good problem, but I don't want. I've been in town in the city I now allegedly live in for I think 3 weeks out of the last 14.
I'm sitting in your apartment right now. You allegedly don't live in here.
Exactly. I barely live here, and I am sick of it. You can't have too much of a good thing. Travel's a good thing. I've had too much of it. I'm there. And this one's going to be insane. It's I'm flying tomorrow morning to Singapore, get on a ship in Singapore, get off that ship in Indonesia somewhere, goes through many Indonesian places, then fly to Cairns, northeast Australia, get on another ship, which then sails down to the southeast of Australia, where thankfully I will get off and get to say hi to my family and friends in
an
actual hometown, which will be good. For about 5 days, where I then get on a flight either to South America or to LA and then to South America. Depends. We're still figuring that out. We don't know yet. Where I catch a ship to Antarctica for 2 weeks, then back to South America, then fly back to LA, and then sleep.
That sounds fun.
It's a thing. There are far worse things a human being could have to do for money, but I would rather not have to do all this. But I'm excited about Antarctica. That's going to be amazing. And I normally keep Christmas and New Year, that's over the Christmas New Year period. Mm-hmm. I normally keep that Christmas free for family and New Year free for potential gigs, yay, whatever. But when the universe offers you a chance to go to Antarctica,
sure.
I think it is a disservice to turn the universe down.
Yeah, it's one of the advantages of working ships is that you go through a lot of chaos all the time, but you get to see a lot of cool places, which is, you know, it evens it out. You know, I'm sitting on a beach in Hawaii last week and calling my buddy and just like, yeah, I was at sea for 6 days. And he's like, it's snowing here. Shut up.
Yeah. Although the problem is, and honestly, at most ports, honestly, now I just barely even get off the ship because I do not enjoy solo travel. I don't, unless you've got someone that whose company you enjoy to go, holy crap, are you seeing this shit?
Yeah.
And also because with ships, you're seeing these amazing places for about 6 hours at a time. Ship arrives, ship leaves the same night. It's just, I like to travel by settling into somewhere, and at least for a few days, get to know it, walk around, feel it out, rather than just, I don't like sightseeing. Like, sightseeing just has no appeal to me. Like, there's things I've seen that I'm glad I've seen, but I could have just lived without it. And had an actual interesting travel experience.
I have a really tough time making friends and getting to know people I don't know. So working ships has literally forced me to not be introverted anymore. Like my first day on a ship, if I'm not doing a show, my new thing is to go see whatever variety performer is performing. Hopefully it's the comedian because usually we have the most in common.
Yep.
I'll go right backstage right after the show, say, hey man, that was a great show. It was a lot of fun. My name is Nick. I'm the guest entertainer. If you want to hang out or grab a drink, let me know. And it doesn't work out all the time. Yeah. And you don't always, you're not always compatible with everybody because, let's face it, we're all weirdos in different ways.
Yeah.
But it it makes it's helpful to have like a little buddy or somebody who's like, we're in this together. Yeah. Even if, and it's like a film set where like people go, oh man, you I'm not talking about me, but you hear it like in like talkbacks, hey, do you hang out with the cast? Do you see people? And they're like, no, we never see each other because you're just in this little town, this little world for a tiny amount of time. And you just make it work. And you see that on ships. You see, it's hard to like make friends with some of the crew and some of the staff because they're in this own little universe that they've kind of created. And you're only there for a week or two. And it's hard to kind of jump into that. So it's nice to make friends with people who are also in the same boat, literally.
And I have on various occasions actually made some pretty good friends with cast and crew on ships, but it's definitely the exception. It's because to them, and depending on the ship and the line, because for example on Seabourn, the cast and the rest of the entertainment staff on board are also doing things like hosted dinners and stuff that you are also doing. So you actually have a lot more in common. Mm. You have a lot more overlap, so you see them a lot more. And so that's usually where I've actually got to know them. Whereas on some of the bigger ships, you just never see the cast. They've got different duties and they've got really no time to hang out with someone who's just passing through for a week before another bunch of entertainers pass through for a week the next week and the next week and the next week and not the same forever.
Yeah, you meet these. It's taken me a long time doing 3 years of ships to realize that like the entertainment organization people, the entertainment director on board the ship, they give you a nice hello, but they really don't care about you. Yeah. And I was like, man, that's terrible. But you kind of, if you put yourself in their position, it's changing every 7 days, essentially. Whole batch, of, depending on the ship. Like I was on Holland, and it's usually like 4 different guest performers. So for them to like get to know everybody every single time is a lot of work. And they're also doing a million other things. So it's kind of your responsibility to check in and go, hey, how's it going? I'm Nick. If you need anything, let me know. And then get away.
yeah, leave them alone. I mean, the job of a cruise director, holy crap, that's a job. Just the thing that really hit me is there are no days off. Yeah. That's what's so messed up. 0 days off each week. They are going nonstop every day, 7 days a week, forever.
Yeah.
For the length of their 3 to 6 to whatever month contract. Just, I couldn't do it. There's no way I could handle that. While having to basically ideally remember every guest's name.
Yeah.
On the ship and, you know, who they are and what they're doing and just be on top of so much while planning and scheduling. Oh, God, it'd be my nightmare.
It's funny, working Holland is different than other ones because the cruise directors are basically figureheads.
Yeah.
You meet them and like, hey, how's it going? And then they just kind of go off and do their own thing. They're not really scheduling things. They're not really planning things. But yeah, other ships, they are the director of everything. Yeah. And that is the person you have to please if you want to keep working.
Yep.
Let's see here. Oh, this is something we wanted to bring up. You did your little show in Vegas for Penn and Teller.
My little magic trick.
And you said you were talking in the I think the week before.
It was like, 2 episodes ago, I think.
You're like, I'm not nervous. Why would I be nervous? This is I'm fine. And then you said, what, right before you walked on, you were struck in with this?
And to be fair, I think, in my defense, the tone there was a little off. It wasn't like a bragging, I'm not nervous. It's like, no, I don't feel nervous. Nice. And I didn't feel nervous because it was just, again, I normally get nervous when there's unknown factors, when it's a new routine or a different kind of situation. Whereas this, I've been on that stage before. I've done the trick before. I've met the cast and crew there before. It's all fine. Whereas, when I got to Vegas and was prepping the trick and just backstage in the Penn and Teller Theater, it started just being in that space, being in that however many 100-seat theater it is in the Rio, in the legendary Penn and Teller stage, it started to hit me just what a big, momentous deal this was. Just this show, this duo, this theater is such a significant piece of world magic history in what it represents and what it means and being in the crowd, because I closed the show. I was actually at the end,
God,
not the beginning.
Worse.
Yeah, I know exactly that too.
When you told me that, I was like, "Oh God!"
Yeah, it's you because you're the closing act that night, and they mention it at the top of the show. They say this is now tonight's a special night. Many of you may be familiar with this TV show, Fool Us, that we do, and tonight we are having one of the Foolers to end the show with us, which is a look forward to that. Now on with the show. And then and while this is happening, I'm in the audience with some friends I've brought along.
No thanks.
Watching, because I haven't seen their show in years. I was looking forward to seeing it. And as I'm sitting there and the show is happening, it's a great show. And it's effing Penn and Teller. They're legends. They're one of the very few really famous magic acts I personally find very inspiring. And have been inspired.
And they're always reworking new stuff. Even if something in there that's new and it's kind of weak, in a month or two, it's going to be super strong.
Yeah. And so there were a bunch of things I hadn't seen before, so I'm enjoying it. And as I'm watching it, it's hitting me. Just there's, I don't know, another 1,000 other people, I don't know the exact number, in the theater, just members of the public who are just there, who have paid to be there to watch the Penn & Teller show. And then so when I go backstage about 10 minutes before the ending to get ready, you get the cue from the stagehands who are like, hey, get over here. And going back, and it's really nice backstage, and way nicer than most backstages are. As we know, most backstages are shit. And I got nervous as heck. It was, oh God, I was so on edge. And like slow breathing to calm down. I wasn't panicking, but heck yeah, I was so much more nervous than I thought I would be and had been for a long time. But yeah, it didn't hit me until an hour before the performance.
Yeah. I've been going through that a lot lately where I've been getting these little bouts of like severe panic attacks and anxiety for stuff I've done several times. And then other times it doesn't come at all. Like we did a show together on Wednesday at Booby Trap. And there are times where I'm about to go on stage and I have like a mini panic attack for whatever reason. And then this time you're fine. And I wish I could pinpoint what that is. Because I thought it used to be the uncontrollable factors. But I'm doing a gig tonight. I've done 1,000 times. And still I'm nervous for whatever reason. And I don't know why that is. And I think people don't talk about that enough. Because I think there is way too many like confident performers. They go, whatever.
I'm great. Yeah. No problem. Yeah. It's funny. I'm just thinking how we're working our way through the Two Magicians, One Mic Bingo by mentioning Booby Trap.
Hey, would you... No, you said we weren't allowed to mention. So if you want to mention it...
I forgot to follow up on that.
I think you should ignore mention that.
Strike that from the record.
No, that's... You gotta put it out there.
Yeah, all right. So
you don't have to name who did it.
Yeah, a listener / fan of the podcast who has donated money, and we appreciate this person.
Hey, by the way, if you want to donate money, you can go to our Patreon.
If you want to do that, that is
I'm
the
so
thing
terrible
you can
at
do.
Sales.
The... a friend and person who listens to the podcast sent me a joke, Two Magicians, One Mic Bingo. And I can't remember what's on it. We'll post it up on the Twitter. I'll get his permission. He'll be fine. It's just very funny that we realize that we do have recurring topics, one of which is Booby Trap. I think from memory, it was
China.
Booby Trap. It's Booby Trap. Simon has just come back from China.
Simon's Nick, money, maybe?
Nick mentions Disney.
Yeah.
I
did that this one.
Yep, exactly. What was the other? Oh God, I can't remember now.
You gotta pull it up.
Oh yeah, new logo.
New logo.
which
never gets
there may
done.
Be another one. So we're working our way through it. But Booby Trap is great. We love Booby Trap because it's awesome. And yeah, I forgot we were both there on Wednesday, which is unusual. Have we ever both done it at the same time before?
I don't think so.
Who knows? But I was super nervous because I was doing a new bit. I was doing the awkward first performance of a new trick that just... You no matter how much you work on it, you need to get through that first tricky performance. Mm-hmm. And I did that on Wednesday with a new routine, and it went okay.
Yeah, like,
but I was really worried.
Always talk about trying out new stuff on stage, and the thing about with that is if it fails, you can immediately call it out and go, well, trying new stuff, that's what happens. Yeah. Like, I think Maria Banford has a great one, goes, these jokes are my babies, sometimes they're not ready to fly, let's just take those back in. And if it bombs... And with magic, you can't. Like, if the coin doesn't appear inside the magical effect that you're doing without giving it away, there is no...
Yep.
That is 4 minutes of nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no payoff. And, you know, you can still be an engaging performer and connect with the audience, and there are jokes, but not really. It's, the core tenet of what you're trying to do, if that's not delivered, pretty bad. And also risks exposing a magic method, which is not the worst thing in the world, but definitely something you really want to avoid. There's more consequence to screwing up a magic trick than bombing a joke.
It's weird doing a show like that where you're with so many other performers, because you would think the stakes are so low. Well, if it doesn't go well, I'll be forgotten. But in some cases, if you overthink that, you'll be like, if it doesn't go well, I'll be the guy that, I liked all those other acts, but we didn't like that guy. And then that messes with your ego, that messes with your... the way you're perceiving, which is stuff you shouldn't even be thinking about.
Well, ideally. I mean, yeah. If we want to get into things that should or shouldn't be the case, let's talk about the world, Nick. Let's talk about humanity.
Oh, we're going there.
I'm always there. But yeah, you're right. It is. I mean, I love shows like that with a bunch of performers. I love being in ensemble shows. So much of our work is solitary, and sure. I'm sick of it. And it's nice just only having to worry about your own stuff. But I love it so much more when working on collaborative stuff.
I think that's why we're so passionate about trying to get this fringe show it's Magic Smackdown or Name This Magic Show, whichever. We can't like figure out the correct name the audience gets to vote for their favorite performer.
Have we ever talked about that on this podcast before?
If we ever have.
I don't think we have.
But I think we both have that passion just because it's an excuse to go perform with our friends.
Yeah. Well, and so for background, it's as myself, Nick, John Armstrong, and John Lovick were the four who really did it, put it together. How did it start? What was the motivation?
I was in Macau. I said, hey, let's all do a fringe show. And John's like, yes, I'll get it all going. And then we're like, what's the fringe show 3 weeks prior?
Yeah.
And then we came up with this idea where the audience votes in real time.
Yeah, because I foolishly said that I could program software that would let them do that on their phones for real. Because that's the thing, with when you come with voting, right, with to vote by applause, it's always a little bit meh. It's always a little bit undramatic, and
there's always somebody that deserves to win that didn't because of you're sitting in the audience going, I think that
when
guy
the voting
got more
system
applause.
Is so messy. And so I had this idea, what if you, and I've seen things like this at conferences, but that required really expensive infrastructure, and basically where people bring up their smartphones, you have a screen above the stage that has the voting interface. And then you tell them to go to a website. They get a little live voting interface on their own screen so they can vote anonymously. And on the screen, it counts out just how many people have voted. It doesn't say for who. So you can see, 10, 20, 50, 75 votes. All right, all the votes are in. And then I programmed it again with 2 days' notice, just threw this thing together. So then a set of visuals come up just showing, drum roll, ding, here are the scores. And what we didn't realize was how much drama it would add to it, because we don't know what the vote is going to be. I coded the system so that we don't see until it really
happens.
Unlike
America's Got Talent, we don't know who the winner's going to be.
Exactly. And that's the point. Most voting shows are bullshit. Whereas this one's completely real. And so if, among other things, worried, what if one of us gets no votes? That's going to be awkward. It's going to be really weird.
Lovick and I, Handsome Jack, who goes by Handsome Jack, we were talking literally before stage. What if there's a round where one person gets zero votes?
Yeah.
How's that going to feel? And he goes, yeah.
And he got one vote, I think, one
I think
round.
He got one that
it
time.
Was one, yeah.
But you could see his face. It was that really affects
you. It's rough. And that's the thing. It added so much real, genuine drama because we were worried. The audience was worried. No one knew what was going to happen. It was genuine suspense. And we didn't really realize till we did it how powerful that would be. And it was great.
And we did it the first time and I did very well just because I did A material and everybody else was doing B material, trying new things. And then the audience is people were talking to after, it goes, oh, you're gonna win every time.
Yeah.
And I go, I don't think so. And sure enough, every other time we've done the show, which is 6 or 7 times now, it's always been a different winner. There are so many different factors that go into it, which is kind of fun.
It's fascinating to see. Again, it's very interesting as a research study. But I think we also made the rule that originally we were going to all do different stuff every show. But I think we made the rule we at least have to do something different each show. We can't do an identical set.
I like the idea where we didn't do it the last time when we did it in May in Orlando when we did that group show for John's wedding. I like there has to be a round where everybody tries something new.
Yeah.
Whether it's a simple bit or something, it can be a minute round.
Yeah.
And that way everybody's put in the same space of being completely naked, essentially.
Well, I think trying the format every time, I think in Orlando we had first round was everyone does a very quick 2-minute bit. And then the winner of that round gets to decide who's the MC or something like that.
Yeah. We've changed it up slightly every time.
Yeah, and that's what I love. There's so many other possibilities with it. There's so many ideas we've had for rounds that we haven't just had enough chances to do it. But the problem is just getting a producer, getting a venue, getting it happening.
If anybody wants to fork over, a couple $100,000 or so and wants to really put this thing, produce this thing,
it's got
contact
potential.
Us. Two Magicians with Mike
and Gmail. The potential to be the greatest live magic show.
No, I think we just, once you stop traveling the world nonstop and we can actually hunker down and get this going. I wanted to do it at some spaces here and people aren't as, like places we regularly perform, and they're not as on board. So I think we just need to.
All right, I'll fix that.
It's just one of those things of nobody gets it until they've seen it.
Yeah,
and like, you just have to show them why it's a good idea.
Did we video Orlando? I can't remember.
I don't think we did.
Yeah, because we suck.
It's okay.
That's actually one of my biggest issues is I have a rule of trying to video every show that you ever do, ever, always, no matter what, video everything, watch it back always. And I've just been really haphazard with that recently, and I'm not proud. I'm going to get back on the wagon. It's tough
because, well, for me, I'm setting up a million things. I'm making sure the lighting works. I'm making sure my audio works. And then I have to make sure 10 minutes before showtime to go out, hit record on my phone. Yeah. Now I don't have a phone on stage to check the time. So I have to use the timer on my iPod. Simple solution. I just needed to buy another clock. Yeah. But it's just an extra layer of things you have to do. I'm just so jealous of like comedians sometimes. We did a variety show with a comedian on the ship last week. And I'm setting up all this stuff just to do a 15-minute bit, make sure everything's in the right spot. And he just walks out with the mic. Just
hanging out.
And he didn't even show up for mic check or sound check.
Every time I schlep my two checked bags off to shows, I'm jealous of the comedian.
But, you know, I think we've talked about this before where we still – it's very minimal what we're bringing in as compared to other acts. Like the entertainment director was amazed I didn't have – tons of boxes shift down to the, he's like, do you have more stuff? I go, no, everything's in my room with me.
Yeah,
they're like, oh wow, that's amazing, because apparently that's not the case for people.
That's funny. It's still my dream to get, because right now my travel load for ship shows, because of needing to do two different 45 minute shows, which is so much material, it's I have to do it with two checked bags and a carry-on. And that's not so bad, but still, I'm trying to get in the airport. That means you've got three wheelie bags to handle, and that's annoying. That's just really fiddly and cumbersome. Yeah. And if I can just get that down to one checked bag and a carry-on, at least that means transit is less of a pain. I'm not kind of awkwardly fumbling with three bags the whole way and making multiple trips. And just quality of life improvement would be massive.
I've gotten it to that, too. I mean, I know this is fascinating talk, but really, it comes down to just... what do I need? Like, what's absolutely necessary? Yeah. How does this pack correctly? And it forces you to analyze your whole show, analyze what you're doing. Because if you're bringing heavier stuff or bulkier stuff for 2 minutes, it's like, is that 2 minutes worth it? Is that necessary?
Yeah, and sometimes yes, sometimes no.
Like, I was not bringing this heavy-duty tripod because I'm like, I don't need that. That's an extra 5 pounds. And then I did shows with my crappy tripod and go, I absolutely need that because... It's setup time, it's professionalism, it's just if I need to adjust the camera on stage, beep, as opposed to the crappy one, which just falls apart.
Yeah.
Just little things like that you don't think about until you've done it 10 times.
Yeah, completely. Well, that's, and this is the other thing, this next trip. So it's going to be Singapore, Indonesia, Australia, and then Antarctica in summer. Now, Antarctica in summer is still cold. It's still Antarctica. It's snow and ice. But that means the first half of the trip is roasting summer weather and then Antarctica. So I have to pack for the opposite extremes.
Yeah.
I need heavy boots and a heavy snow jacket for Antarctica. And I need shorts and swimwear for everything else. And it's the most annoying packing situation I've ever faced because it couldn't be more opposite weather.
Yeah, weather is such a crazy thing to think about when you're traveling, because I've gotten it down to where I bring a crap ton of underwear and socks and a bunch of undershirts, but I only have, once again, fascinating talk for people, but if you travel a lot, getting to the point of minimalism is kind of exciting.
Oh yeah,
because you really focus on what is absolutely necessary.
Yeah,
underwear, socks, undershirts, necessary, one pair of jeans, two pairs of button-downs. That's all you need because you can wash all those things. And therefore, now you have a bunch more space for jackets and boots and things like that.
All the things. Well, it's also, it's very, it's attaining that very zen state.
And that's, that's what it's getting down to.
Well, and this was funny because, again, from having to travel to perform where all your luggage goes on props and equipment and you have no space for clothes and toiletries, you become very minimalist. So then a few years back when I went on a rare personal trip, a bunch of friends were going skiing in Japan, which had been this sort of lifelong aspiration. They're fairly heavy skiers, and I'm good enough at skiing to want to get in on that. And I went along with them. And again, I packed normally and realized I take almost no clothes. I get by on so little now because I don't have any props. But I still only have my big suitcase. And one of the biggest packing tip ever, the best thing you can pack is some empty space. That's Simon's packing tip. Pack some empty space because then you can always bring stuff
nail the title of the episode. Boom, right there.
Spiritually and logistically.
Well, totally. Like, it never happens, but the past two trips, I've put my little bag on the weigh scale and I have 5 extra pounds.
Yeah.
And they congratulate you. They're like, well done, sir. You are under the 50-pound limit.
The thing that happened on this Japan trip that was so funny was I just put all my stuff in my big suitcase and I thought, oh, normally you'd wear your ski jacket onto the plane as because the bulkiest thing. I just kind of shoved that in the suitcase. I needed to bulk up the suitcase so things didn't rattle around. And I figured that, you know, everyone else will buy shit. I'll buy stuff. I'll have some space. I can donate to my friends, you know, whatever. And so the carry-on, the check bag weighed less than my carry-on because I put things on my laptop, my video camera, my essentials in the carry-on. My carry-on actually weighed more than my checked bag.
Mm-hmm.
Carry-on was about 8 kilos. Checked bag was about 5 kilos. Having 10 pounds, I don't even know. And so many times throughout that whole trip, an airport staff person or a hotel porter or something would go to pick up my checked bag and do that whole thing where they react as it just shoots off the ground because it's less than half the weight they expect.
I've become a master packer with my carry-on bag because I have 45 minutes of a show in there.
Yep.
Camera,
oh, yeah.
Couple of bits. I weighed it 40 pounds.
What?
Yeah. 40 Holy pounds for my carry-on shit. Bag.
That would...
my check bag, 45.
See, that's insane.
It's amazing.
Wow.
Because I got my tripod in there. I got the box for the puppet.
Wow.
I got the camera. I got 2 cubes.
God and damn.
Once again, fascinating talk.
For how is that even?
But it's such an accomplishment because it's like, yeah. I have all my shit here that can go through TSA, no problem.
22 kilos or something. What the? Well, see, watch out for that. So pro tip for you, definitely in Australia, in many parts of Europe, particularly for domestic flights, which again is less likely to be what you're doing, there are absolutely many airlines that have a weight limit on your carry-on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that is very easy about America and most international. They don't have weight limits on carry-on.
Sure.
There are a lot of domestic flights out there that do have carry-on weight limits and will check it. And that screwed me a bunch of times.
Yeah.
So watch out for that. Have a plan B ready.
Yeah, that happened coming back from Macau.
Oh, yeah.
Hit the bingo square on that one. Yeah, I had to pay an extra $200 because we were over by 2 kilos. The lady was not budging at all.
Yeah, having that.
What else is going on in the exciting world of everything?
What are we doing on time?
I had stuff written down, but now we have our little microphone things on, and I can't go.
Well, we're looking pretty good at an episode length. Do we want to keep going or edit this part out and then go to a smooth wrap up? I don't know.
Smooth wrap up. That's never it. Yeah, I guess that's it for this episode. Is there anything else? I mean, I've been throwing out topics.
This episode is over. Over.
Yeah.
I know the topics, but I can't remember what they are without checking my phone, which is doing the recording. What was it? Hang on. Okay, I'm going to check.
We can do this.
Hold on. There's going to be some button noise.
I can edit out the button noise.
Where are we? We can edit out this awkward fumbling as we blunder our way through. What's my damn notes app?
Well, you're looking. Thanks to everybody who donated monthly to the Patreon. That's really cool. We got a bunch of people doing it. And if you'd like to, please feel free. It's only a couple bucks a month. And please, please take like 10 seconds and give us like 5 stars on iTunes or Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. Apparently, that makes all the difference.
Oh, really?
But we've had a bunch of extra downloads in the past couple weeks, and I put it up on the Instagram and said thanks to people. I don't know why people listen to its ramble, but I think maybe it's comforting. Maybe they realize how good their lives are.
It's like the sound of the ocean.
Yeah.
It's like... So the other topic I did write down. So I am, again, about to be on a bunch of ships and a bunch of hotel rooms for a long time. And exercise is tricky because and doing finding things to do with the time is tricky. Again, mentioned last time, I've been actually getting back into web dev. I've been getting more productive, which is good. One of the problems on the ships is finding a good place to work. I've never seen an actual ergonomic desk space that I could use. On some ships, there's a good cafe area. Others, there aren't. It varies. There's always cafe areas, but whether it's good to sit down with a laptop for 6 hours.
My last cafe area was at the top of the ship forward, so it was the rockiest part of the ship, even when it was calm.
Right.
So, yeah, cafes are usually like the space to get work done, and couldn't do it.
Well, and inspired by the concept of treadmill desks, which are a thing out there.
Yeah.
So standing desks with a treadmill underneath, so you spend the workday just walking at a slow pace because sitting's bad for you, walking's good for you.
Apparently.
Getting steps is good. I have developed a prototype. I've been working on this throughout the last week and a half, on and off, in between everything else.
Can you just make sure you're still recording?
Oh, yeah. Good call. Yep, still recording.
Okay, cool.
Still good. I have spent the last week and a half, in between other things, I've built a working prototype, I hope, of a desk rig I can attach to a normal gym treadmill. So, because say I buy a treadmill desk, it's in my apartment. I'm never here. I can't use it. Where am I? I'm on ships and I'm in hotel rooms. They have gyms with treadmills.
I'm so glad we didn't cancel the episode and that we just kept going.
And yeah, so my idea is have a small portable collapsible rig that I can kind of put on the treadmill.
We were just talking about space and weight.
Exactly.
You got the room for it?
Look, this would be if this works out, it's a game changer. Because now rather than just sitting on my ass for 6 hours a day, staring at a screen, doing work, getting unfit and having all the health problems of sitting for too long, I'll be on a treadmill desk, getting my steps, burning a small but non-trivial amount of calories, keeping my metabolic system in a good place due to walking, and having good posture for working that long rather than slumped over a cafe chair with bad desk height and everything else. So I'm cautiously optimistic about this, because if that works, that's a freaking game changer, because now I'm spending like most of the day at least moving my body while getting stuff done, as opposed to slumping like a sack of crap.
I like committed this. I was on a ship for 12 days. I think 9 of them, I committed to going to the gym for at least 45 minutes to an hour. Just like, even if I'm not going crazy, set my timer, do it. And trying to apply that into real life too, of just going, all right, this is a task that has to be completed because this is the amount of time I have to kill, or this is the amount of time I have. And same with getting work done, too. I was able to be productive as well for about half of the trip. And then you do the show and you're like, all right, I'm going to watch Avengers now. But, there's something about like just setting tasks and accomplishing them, which we were talking about a little bit last week. But it does a lot for soul points and does a lot for the brain.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, so now in, 5 weeks from now, when we record the next one, you'll get to hear Simon's treadmill desk. Was it great or was it a piece of crap?
Simon got kicked off a boat for having a desk on a treadmill.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's basically what I'm doing is I have, you can see it there, my collapsible table I use on stage. So I need to take that anyway. It's using that as the table base plate, with then some attachment arms that will go to the actual treadmill.
If you get the slightly bigger one, well, that's, it looks like you made this one.
It's a modified one I bought. I made it. I modded it. But it's exactly big enough for my laptop footprint, which is a 13-inch MacBook or whatever. And so, yeah, I mean, the laptop fits on it. I have some kind of rigid arms with sort of clamp-type things that are easily telescoped down and should attach to any size or angle treadmill.
If we could make this more general so people can relate to it, what does that say about why you're doing that, other than the exercise?
Yeah.
Is it like a productivity thing? Is it like forcing you to get it done?
It's a really good question. I mean, I don't get enough exercise. It's just not a thing. I do not exercise.
So skinny.
Yeah, I just don't eat a lot. that's it. Skinniness equals
honestly,
calories in minus calories out.
If you read Penn's book, that's like the biggest thing. Hey, I stopped eating crap and I didn't even really need to exercise that much because your body just goes, oh, you're not eating sugar and fat all the time? Yeah, okay, we'll make it work.
Yeah, but also, but being skinny doesn't mean you're healthy. Like, just because I'm not overweight doesn't mean I'm healthy. I am not a healthy person. I'm not, everything's in okay condition, but just the overall metabolism, like general cardiovascular fitness, is not where I want it to be by a long shot.
Tricking, I understand the treadmill desk because you're tricking your brain in that, like when I'm on a treadmill, I do 10, 20 minutes after I've done a workout because I'm like, that's the maximum amount of time my brain can handle doing nothing, essentially. You're just walking in place. And even if there's a TV on or listen to a podcast, still, my brain can't comprehend it. So you're able to trick your brain into
something. I mean, I don't go to the gym because it is – not only is it physically painful, it is excruciatingly boring. Just to it's a bit like why I hate driving. I would much rather sit on a bus for 6 hours than drive for 2 hours. Because when you're driving, you have to be focused on the driving. You have to be attentive to a boring thing. Whereas on a bus, you can read a book, get some work done, focus the 6 hours on interesting things that makes time fly by. I'm particularly bad at dealing with focusing on things I don't find interesting. It's excruciating. It's a weakness. It's a bad thing. I'm not proud of this. It's something I'm not good at. And the gym is the worst of all the things. Because you're focusing on something that you really have to pay attention to, something incredibly dull, while doing things that are physically painful and hurt. And it's just the worst thing. And so the idea of being able to actually, you know, treadmill is not intense exercise, but it's a lot better than nothing, just to get those basic steps in. You know, walking at a slow pace so you can still be working and typing and getting stuff done. You know, there's a precedent for this. It's not like I invented this idea. The treadmill desks are a well-documented thing that seems to be good. I'm just trying to find a way to actually get those benefits in a way where it's I can't actually set up my own equipment.
Do you want to piss off Nancy in HR? Get a treadmill desk. We should get a sponsor, treadmill desks. We should look into that.
Maybe. Well, I mean, if this thing works, I'll just Kickstarter it and make tens of dollars. It'll be great.
Yeah.
So stay tuned. Will Simon's treadmill desk work out or not?
Man, this episode has gone from slightly boring to incredibly boring. But sometimes they're not all gems.
Look, the whole point of this was inside what it's actually like to be a working magician. This is what it's actually like.
We oddly didn't get very existential this episode.
Yeah, that's
now
okay.
Now that it's our tag.
We don't need to be pigeonholed. It's true. All right. No, I don't want to force it. I want it to be real. That's it. There's more than anything, it should be the real magic podcast. Is that already, that's already the name of something, isn't it?
Well, it's the tag for Real World, but things stop getting something and start getting real.
That was some Real Magic, R-E-E-L, those DVDs that Cosmo Magic did for a while. I don't know if they're still going.
I honestly don't know, but I know everybody did those.
They were really good.
Yeah.
I liked them.
The ones I've seen were great.
Yeah. Good talk.
Oh, man.
This has been Two Magicians, One Mic.
You're just ending it? It's gone?
Look, it's how long? It's over. It's well over half an hour.
Yeah, it's
Isn't
true.
That what we aimed for?
We always hit at least 45.
Yeah, but I don't think that makes it better. It's like, this is why I don't listen to podcasts. They're too freaking long.
It's true.
If I see something that's 45 minutes, I'm like, oh, God, that's longer than
I can
spend.
Well, you don't drive. That's why.
Yeah, that's why.
It's easier to listen like when you're doing another task.
Yeah. If I see 25 minutes, I'm all right. Yep. I'm down for that.
In and out.
Yeah. But I know some people love the long ones. I don't know how do podcasts work.
Yeah, I love You Made It Weird with Pete Holmes, but they do 2.5 hour episodes.
Oh my God. Yeah, see, I just couldn't, I don't have enough time in the day where I can spend that much time listening to something.
It's just focus and how lonely you are that day.
That's fair.
And that's just honest. I get through more podcasts on ships when I'm way more lonely. When I'm here surrounded by friends, I go, I'll finish that later, and I never do.
Yeah.
But it is
what it is. That's a good
point.
Yeah, I don't know where it is. I find it hard to spend that much time focused on one thing. I do most of my productive focus in bite-sized chunks. So focus intensely for half an hour, and then I need to take a break.
Thanks. This reminded me. I'm speaking of a new task, I'm learning how to solve a Rubik's Cube.
Oh, yeah.
So anybody who can solve a Rubik's Cube is like, yeah, whatever. I can do that.
Yeah.
But if you don't know how to solve it,
it's
kind of mind-blowing.
Yeah.
And I can solve half... no problem now. Mm. But the second half, last night I was researching, there's algorithms apparently.
Yeah.
And now I have to memorize these four or five algorithms.
Are you getting on the Rubik's Cube magic bandwagon?
Well, here's the thing. It's so overdone and so well done by certain people. Mm. But I had an idea where I want to get rid of my hackier material or update it. And I had an idea with one thing. To update it with a Rubik's Cube.
So
and
you
I
want
think
to go
it
modern
will...
hacky rather than classic hacky. I like it.
Yes.
That's improvement.
Still probably shouldn't be doing it. But I told myself, I'm like, you can't go in the show unless I actually can solve the damn thing.
Yeah.
Because so many people do it
and
use a gimmick that I won't reveal that don't actually know how to solve a Rubik's Cube. And that's fine. I'm not – no judgments.
Yeah.
But I literally – And I don't have to be good at it, but I want to know what I'm doing. Mm. And I want to know why the thing works.
Yeah.
Because the dude who invented the thing couldn't solve it until they took it apart and saw where it was working and why it works. And to me, that's fascinating. And I haven't learned a new task in a long time.
Yeah.
I learned a new objective in a long time. Like with magic, you kind of know you have your things in your tool belt and you have the things that you use over and over because I'm like, oh, I know how to palm a card easily. I know how to do a double if fine, even if John Armstrong tells me I'm doing it wrong. Which he's not wrong. I'm working on it, John. I'm getting there. I will do it the way you want soon. But there is something kind of gratifying to the brain of just last night I had a breakthrough. I've been sitting with a half-solved Rubik's Cube on my own, sat in the ship all week, couldn't get past a certain point. And last night I had a breakthrough, and I almost solved the damn thing. And then right before bed, I messed it all up. Like, literally messed the whole thing up.
I'm curious about how you're learning, because if you're being given good instruction, which it sounds like you're not, you shouldn't need to have those experiences. It should be you can follow the steps and absolutely 100% get it every time.
Well, that's the point.
As long as you have a crib sheet of the algorithms that you need to memorize, that's the only half of it is memorizing the algorithms.
Well, the thing, I kind of ignored the algorithms part. I'm like, you solve this side, then it solves the white, great, and then you got the two sides all solved on each side, and you're good to go. And I simply out of laziness, I was like, no, if I can solve this, I can do it the other way. And I couldn't.
Yeah, turns out.
It turns out there's a mathematical reason for that. And I mean, it sounds so stupid, but I'm not a mathematical person.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to think in three dimensions sometimes.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to think. That's why I'm so terrible at chess.
Yeah.
I can only win one way in chess is if like the queen and if you have two queens and a rook or something and you lock someone in, that's the only way I can win in chess. I don't know other ways because I can't think three methods ahead.
Yeah.
So for me to be terrible at mathematics like that, I was always an A and B mathematics person. But for me to be terrible at that and then succeed is kind of a breakthrough. I feel like I've done so. Even if somebody who can solve a Rubik's Cube is going, you're an idiot, which they rightfully should be saying, it feels good to just go, okay, figure that out. Yeah. And I probably will not be great at solving Rubik's Cubes, but I at least want to be able to do it.
Oh, God, yeah. It is, as someone who has gone on that same journey, about a year ago, I went, all right, going to learn to do it. And it was for magic reasons. I wanted to do, again, there was a specific Rubik's Cube magic idea that in order to practice it, I needed to be able to fix screw-ups. And to fix screw-ups, I needed to be able to actually solve it without taking it apart. And so it just went down. It took me about a month in between other things to really kind of get it down and memorize the things I needed to memorize. And it's really, I now really enjoy it. I find solving a cube, it's a very cathartic thing. Yeah. It's almost like doing a kata in a martial art. It's just, you know, it's just nice going through those motions, that familiar dance, that routine of doing it. It's just intellectually challenging enough to apply the things you've memorized to it in the right order to get it down.
Yeah, it's the same way I understand. My wife loves crosswords, and I understand people who like Sudoku.
It's like a very Sudoku kind of feeling. It's not a new experience, but it's a nice
especially with just process to go through. The chaos of the news cycle of how everybody's dying all the time.
Yeah.
Which is not true, but that's what they want you to think. Mm. It's nice just to have because I don't get sports. I don't really understand sports that much.
Yeah.
Even with video games, it's still to in a point where it's not as relaxing as it should be. So it's nice to have these little things in your life where you can go shut everything off and figure it out.
Yeah.
Once again, we're almost at 45.
Cool. You and your 45. You've got this 45 obsession. That's what real podcasts are. 45
minutes. I just
want to
piss you off. It's not even a other reason. No, we can end now. But I just want to say, I think
I just want to make sure it's high value to time ratio.
No, that's my favorite thing I ever learned in AP English, Mr. Akers. I'll tag you in this. Quality over quantity.
Yeah.
He would always go. He would assign a paper. You know, for high schoolers to assign a paper and say, no minimum.
Mm.
But I'm pretty sure I've mentioned this before. But for him to say that to high schoolers and say, it can be a paragraph, but it better be a darn good paragraph.
Yeah.
Or it can be 10 pages, but you get your idea out there.
That's interesting. I don't remember you mentioning that before. That's
I don't
a
think
cool concept.
Many, high school teachers would say that.
Yeah.
They'd be like, no, it has to be 3 pages because that's what the syllabus says.
Well, I think that's because most high school teachers, like most people of any demographic or profession, are the worst. And don't really think about what they're doing and don't really focus on what matters.
I think it's
true of lawyers, magicians, system. Politicians, real estate agents, men, women, everybody. Like, pick name a demographic group, and most of them are just idiots.
We're talking about it, booby trap. What's the line that translates in Chinese, make 35?
Oh, yeah, this is something I learned in Macau. I forget the exact number, but it's whatever the communist government mandated minimum standard wage is in mainland China. I think it's like 36,000 yuan, which is nothing in American dollars. But again, there is, you can survive on that. And the saying translates from Chinese to work hard, get 36. Do nothing, get 36. Which is why mainland China is fucked and nothing works there.
That's amazing and translates to so many different things.
Yeah.
But I had an idea because you're going to be traveling. So I think for the December 5th, because we're doing episodes on the 1st and 15th,
okay.
Which I think confuses the heck out of people. We should probably just do every other Wednesday, but I'm sticking to it. 1st and 15th.
That makes sense. No, start of the month and halfway through the month.
Because sometimes it's a Sunday, sometimes it's a Thursday. You never know.
But we should do something special for our Ides of March. Is the Ides the midday of the month? That's what that means, right?
Sure. I don't know.
When Caesar was murdered on the beware the Ides of March. I think the Ides is the middle.
I think so.
I'm going to check that now.
I'm not sure. I have no correct answer or not. Pretend but I think we're coming up on our 2-year anniversary the Macau sessions, which people love.
It's been that long.
So I'm going to sit down and suffer through all 8 or 9 episodes and try to find the best of.
Oh, wow.
This is the idea I just had. I hope it actually comes to fruition. You'll find out on December 15th. Who knows? We'll see if I can actually do it. I should have done this last week when I was sitting on a boat with lots of free time. But I think I might be able to pull it off. I'm going to go through each episode and just like little snippets.
Really interesting.
And see how much we contradict ourselves, which is probably a lot. If somebody doesn't want to listen to all of it, they can listen to like a 45-minute episode or whatever.
Sort of the Macau sessions condensed into one. Oh, that could be so interesting. Yeah, and sort of doing like to make it clear when it's cutting between clips of different weeks.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Could be interesting to see that because there's got to be so many little journey arcs of us being optimistic at the start, then questionable, then just in existential despair, then redeemed at the end of it when we come out of it.
I got the idea from my buddy Taylor Hughes, who has, we've talked about before, a good friend of ours, About to Break podcast. He's coming up on like 100 episodes or something crazy. So he's doing a best of as well.
Right.
Or actually he's doing, I don't even know if that, he's doing something secretive, but it kind of got my brain thinking of going, oh, we've done enough of these and we're kind of hitting this like 2-year anniversary of that. So just crazy to think about.
That is crazy.
But yeah, 46 minutes.
Oh my God, you're the worst.
Suck a bag. All right, that's it.
Here at Two Magicians, One Mic, we don't guarantee quality, but we guarantee 45 minutes of content.
I think we've only done like a couple 30. Maybe the last one we split up 2 episodes, we did 30.
Yeah.
That's okay. But anyway, safe travels.
Thanks.
Hang out with the penguins. You. Let me know how it
Will
is.
Will do.
And yeah, okay. Bye-bye.
And scene.
Thanks so much for listening to the show. Please give us 5 stars on Apple Podcast. If you really like the show, you can donate a few bucks a month on our website, twomagiciansonemic.com, or become a monthly subscriber through our Patreon link. Thanks to all the people that support the show and keep it up and running. Be sure to follow us on the interwebs @twomagiciansonemic. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great week.